Hello and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we absolutely love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will do their utmost to tailor a quote to your exact needs, hopefully saving you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you can never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Right, it's another week, and that means an absolutely another stellar guest. We're both very excited, especially you, Prutz. You love this man.
I really, really am. As I watch this fella's content all the time, chuffed to bits that we've got him on here. He's one of the biggest motorcycling content creators on the planet. He's from Canada. He works for Fort Nine. His videos are brilliantly watched, and literally millions of people do tune in. It's Ryan Cliftinger, and thank you so much, my friend, for joining us here today.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. Seems like a fun show, so I'm stoked.
Thank you. I just want to clarify as well. I bigged you up that Prutz loves you. I love you as well, because I was checking out your YouTube stuff, and I've got to say, your channel Fortnite, what I love is your delivery, it's your dry wit, and it's just, I don't know, the way that you deliver everything to the camera, I just absolutely love it. I mean, it must be a dream job for you, reviewing bikes and doing it in your own manner.
It's very kind. Yeah, it's not at all work. Not in any sense work. I have to check myself all the time, because we'll be on a big shoot day or something. I'll get home at the end of the day and my wife will ask, you know, how it was. And, you know, the answer always has to be, it was fantastic. No matter how long it was, no matter how cold it was, whatever. Okay, I was playing around on bikes all day and just shooting the shit with my friends who are, you know, the guys who film and edit around here. So, yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. You've got over, I think it's 2 million subscribers on YouTube. I mean, you're definitely doing something right. If anyone watching this hasn't come across your channel, explain what you do on Fortnite. Explain the process and what you do.
Yeah, so we make videos about motorcycles. That's pretty much the brief. As long as it's entertaining to riders, or useful to riders, or educational to riders, then we're interested in it. Our parent company, Fort Nine, is much like a sport bike shop in the UK, or Revzilla in the States. It's like an e-commerce retailer. But they pretty much don't care what we do on the content side. From day one, they were just like, make stuff that you love, and our name's on it, and we're happy about that. So, so we have a lot of freedom. So we do bike reviews on bikes that we're interested in. When we get bored of that, we'll do gear reviews and cut things apart and tear things up and do that for a while. When we get bored of that, maybe we'll do a mechanic video or a how-to video or riding tip video or whatever. I'm very fortunate now that we're big enough that we get some opportunities. So, you know, we catch some notice sometimes, like, the police motorcycle training around here will be like, hey, come up to the course. Okay. Now we get to do that fun thing. Or last year, Bosch, had us out to their, proving grounds in Michigan. We got to play around on the basalt tiles. They have like a friction coefficient of snow or ice. You put the outriggers on the bike and just spin round and round. You can crash as many times as you want without any consequences. So yeah, at this point, we're really just playing on this channel. And that's what it is.
The content is amazing, Ryan. I mean, and the production value on it as well is absolutely fantastic. And as Ewan said, if you're listening to this, get yourself over to YouTube and watch it, because I made a note of the recent ones that I've watched that have really stood out amongst all of them that stand out. The review of the Honda Silverwing was amazing. The bike airbag, which absolutely did its job. I then went out and bought said airbag, which has been transformative in the way that I ride and what I wear.
Sweet.
Scrambling up those ridiculous dunes on a bike that was quite low power, which is, and then hypermiling, because if you're listening to this, hypermiling, trying to stretch out that last bit of petrol or gas before that red light becomes a flashing red light, before it says, get off the bike, it can't move. Because I've done that so many times where I'm praying to the gods of biking to get to the next petrol station. And now you've taught me how to do it. Maybe, well, I'll probably keep my bike filled up, which is a sensible option. But also, I might be able to drag it out as you're going in the pouring rain, trying to get to the next place. It's fascinating, all of it, mate. So good.
I'm glad you appreciate it. And you hit me right in the heart there, because that Silverwing's the bike I rode in on this morning. I love that motorcycle. It's my day-to-day one. Airbag I wear every day, and you know, hypermiling. That video is just kind of funny to me, because we shot that on a Hercules Wankel, like a rotary, old rotary bike from the 80s, which is the worst gas mileage motorcycle I think I've ever ridden. It runs out of gas every, you know, 100 kilometers or something stupid. So it was a fun one to do it on.
So again, I mean, all these given. I mean, the reference that you've given us is a fantastic one, because the minute you say sports bike shop, everyone knows what you're talking about. Obviously, this side of the pond.
Yeah.
We've got a local one here in Leeds, not too far from me, and we know what biker shops are like. You don't go in and not talk to anyone. You go in and you spend half an hour talking to everybody in there, and maybe come out with a snood or something to clean your helmet with, and try all the expensive stuff on and put it back. But that, the ability to jump from that or dovetail into that, what you've done on YouTube, what you've done on social media, I mean, did they for 1 second think it was going to grow as much as it did? It wasn't something just to keep you all occupied, was it? And then suddenly they're going, oh, Christ, we've got 2 million subscribers now. How does that work?
Yeah, I don't think we ever thought it would grow to the extent it did. In the early days, it was just like a SEO branding project. So Fort Nine used to be called Canada's Motorcycle. Now, you don't switch the name of an e-commerce company overnight, much as you want to, because Google will just say, I don't know what this is, and no one will ever find your business again. So we knew we wanted to rebrand. We knew we wanted to be Fort Nine. So we made a channel called Fort Nine on YouTube like 6 months in advance of switching the website over. Mm-hmm. That was all the function that it had to play. That's all we wanted it to be. But of course, we were willing to ride the wave as far as it carried us. And when the channel started to do well, then, all right, my job suddenly turned into a dream job. So I didn't want to leave that. And the fortunate thing about YouTube, and it's cool for companies, is that you have a marketing initiative that also earns money. Like, channels are profitable. They earn money off AdSense. They earn money off of affiliate commissions. They can earn money off sponsorships. So pretty soon we had the ship that floated itself. And so then that justified hiring more people and upping the production value further, maybe traveling further to make a video. So at this point we're robust enough that I think we could just kind of steer this thing where we want it to go. And on Fort Nine's end, it's cool because it's a bunch of marketing and they pretty much don't have to pay for it. So
like Pratt said earlier, and you've just explained it so well in terms of obviously the budgets are there because your videos show that the quality of everything is superb. Me and Pratt love a freebie. Now, we don't get many good things for free, but what I've got to ask you is, when you do review a bike and you get given some wonderful bikes, some wonderful kit, and I love the fact you're brutally honest. If you don't like it, you say about it. If you point out the bad points as well, how does that relationship then change if a manufacturer says, hang on, we're not lending you another bike. Last time you tore us to shreds. Do you burn bridges ever, or are you polite as you can be? You're being honest.
Yes. No, exactly as you said, the relationship changes. We've had a few manufacturers that we've worked with once. They've loaned us a press bike. We've made a video on it. They didn't like how we talked negatively. I would say honestly about my impressions of the bike. And that's been the end of it. So we get some stern worded phone calls or emails, and then we never get a press bike again. That's the way it is with some manufacturers, and I don't want to badmouth them all, cause there's some really cool ones out there. We've got relationships with others. I mean, if I'm going to praise them, I might as well tell you, like, KTM is amazing. They give us bikes and we rag them apart, and they'll say, cool, this feedback's really useful. We like to hear, the good and the bad, and see you on the next one kind of thing. Which is really neat. We did one recently with Can-Am. They're a Canadian manufacturer of three-wheelers, and they've just made these motorcycles. It's like the first motorcycles they've made in 40 years. And they're these electric bikes, and they ride, or one of them rides pretty well, but the range is horrible, and the price point's very high. And overall, the review was not very positive.
It was funny though. I've watched that one. I found it funny.
Yeah. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. And we owe everything to our fans. Like, I wouldn't have a job if it weren't for, the 2 million people that are watching. So my first allegiance is always to them. So if I think a bike sucks and it's a bad value proposition, I'll tell you it sucks and it's a bad value proposition because I owe everything to you. If Can-Am then comes to me and says, hey, we don't want to ever work with you again, then, so be it. Having said that, that's not what they did. Can-Am was really cool. They also were like, we're disappointed. We obviously hoped you'd like it more, but this is good information, and we hope to prove you wrong in the market, and we hope to see you at the next launch and this kind of thing. So there's some really great manufacturers out there, and then there are also ones who you could probably guess by looking at the press bikes 4.9 has that work with us once or maybe never. And then just don't want to do it again.
Does it become awkward? Like if you've seen like an ex-girlfriend at a party, do you go to like a bike event and say, oh my gosh, there's Harley Davidson. I bet.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. For sure. It's awkward. And that's, you know, that's the cost of war. That's what we got to do for our fans. So.
But the thing as well, I mean, and I'm an unashamed fanboy with this, Ryan, with you and Fort Nine, of course, but the thing that draws it in, and like I said, we said at the start, and Ewan's mentioned it as well, A, your delivery, and then B, the production values. There's a real likability about what you're talking about. But what underpins it all, whether you're describing the different mechanisms and the different way that different engines are put together, or leaning into corners, or what's the best way for your braking, or what makes your riding better. And like I said, the breakdown of the Silverwing was just phenomenal for a bike nut like me. Are you trained in any of this, i.e. the mechanics of motorcycles, the electronics of motorcycles? Like, because you can describe an engine in a wonderful way that's both accessible and actually quite interesting, which takes some doing. So you must absolutely have that foundation, that solid base of knowledge to come from.
Kind of. Yeah, my education's in physics, so that's why I often go pretty like first principles on the engine stuff, mm-hmm. because I'm a physicist and not an engineer. So there's some education there. I usually attack things from a mechanical or kinematics perspective first. But then after that, it's just having been in the industry now for 10 years. 10 years I've been doing this job, and so I'm lucky enough to get to read and learn about bikes, you know, 5 days a week, sometimes 6-7 days a week. And so a lot of training comes with that. I try to do usually like 3 or 4 courses a year, because I love them. And those are the things that give me a bit more knowledge and usually help me make the next video or the next video. So to answer your question, yeah, a tiny little bit of training in a weird tangential way with the physics thing. And then everything else is just haven't been in this gig for a while.
It sounds to me like it's the perfect job. It's just, you've been doing it a long time, 10 years. How do you keep it fresh in terms of coming up with next ideas for adventures? Do you have a team of people behind you suggest things, or are you like an excitable little puppy? You're like, no, let's go off riding here, or let's go and try these mountains, or who comes up with the ideas?
Both of those things. I am an excitable little puppy. And at this point, the idea is usually just walk in the door, because I'll meet someone out and about and they'll say, oh, hey, like, you know, I know the channel and you guys should really do this thing, or I've got this cool old bike, like maybe come ride it sometime, make a video. That happens a lot, which is amazing. As I said, we get invited to stuff. We get invited to do experiences or courses and stuff that's interesting. My idea board is bigger than I'll ever have time to do. Like, I think I have maybe 100 videos in my Trello board that I would love to make. I wouldn't get around to making them anytime before the next 2 years. And by then there'll be another 100 videos in that board. So ideas are easy, and I like ideating, but it's also true that I have a great team. Where to even start? I've got a niche here. Him and I have been shooting together for probably 7 years now. So he's a shooter, editor, big film guy. Much of what you see when you say like, wow, the production value is really high. That's just a niche. He's like a one-man movie machine. And then I've got Edwin, who's very much the same. Him and I also shoot one-on-one, but whenever he does it, the production value is super high. And then Garish as well, who is in the exact same boat. So, but we run a one-to-one team. So on any video, like it'll be me and Anish, or me and Edwin, or me and Garish. But it's usually only ever two people on the shoot. And then just recently we've added a couple other content creators. So I've got a couple other buddies here who make videos you might see on the channel. And one guy who makes stuff for shorts particularly. So excited puppy, and also part of a pretty good team.
And as you use the term excited puppy, you can see from this that Ewan is our own excitable puppy on the podcast, bouncing up and down with his bursting with ideas. Let's go back to the start then. So there's an innate love of motorcycles and what they're about. What is your motorcycle journey then so far, Ryan? What did you start off on?
My dad had bikes. He's got great stories about doing the California coast on an RD350. Should not be a lovely place to sit for that long. He had a Suzuki 750 for a while. So I saw the pictures, and he got me into dirt biking when I was 11. So I got into motocross first. bunch of my buddies and I built like this kind of bullshit motocross track up in the hills. No guidance, no safety regulations, no race league. It was just kind of turn up and run what you brung. That was a fantastic way to start. I think I learned a lot of skills while I was still like bouncy and bendy and malleable like that.
Fearless as well.
Yeah, fearless as well. Yeah, it blows my mind. When I go to a motocross track now, it's terrifying.
I'm looking
at the doubles and I'm like, I can't believe I used to go over these. Like, I'm terrified now. And then of course I'm getting blasted by like 13-year-olds who are smoking me around the track. So yeah, that was kind of the beginning of two wheels. And then I was never really supposed to get a license. My mom wasn't keen on the idea. But I had a job up in the hills of British Columbia at like a provincial park, national historic site. So it was like maybe 20K of like a pretty gnarly dirt road to get there. And I was destroying the family Toyota, like going up and down this road every day. So my dad had a DRZ 400 and I said, oh, if you let me get my license, like I can take the DRZ and we'll save the family car and I'll just use my license for work. And I managed to convince my mom that way and get my motorcycle license at a young age. And I'm still just using it for work, so it's okay. Still above board.
It's amazing, Ryan, the amount of people we talk to, and it's quite a similar story in terms of maybe not the same location, but yeah, my dad got me into it. My mum wasn't so keen, but yeah, it's the same for me as well. I used to go on the back of my dad's bike as a kid, and I think there's something so special. We speak to many people on there, and we all agree that there's something unique about being on two wheels. It's hard to sometimes even describe just that sense, that freedom, that feeling it gives you. But when did you know, or when did you have an inkling that, hang on a minute, this hobby of mine actually might become a career? Or did you never ever dream in your wildest dreams one day you'd make a living and have over 2 million people following your bike journeys?
Yeah, I never dreamed. I'd pretty much given up motorcycling for dead when I moved out to Montreal, because it's a very urban city. I lived downtown. My whole world was within like 3 kilometers of my apartment. So I didn't have a car. I didn't have a bike. I was just kind of walking everywhere. Was kind of deep into the more physics side of my world, just hanging around the lab most days. But I had to pay a bill, so I got a gig as a writer at this motorcycle company, Canada's Motorcycle, just like writing ad copy. It jumped up in my face, and suddenly it was like amazing. You know, I can keep motorcycling as part of my life and get paid to do stuff with it. So that was just dumb luck.
Dumb luck. That's a good name. Yeah. Good name for the podcast, Dumb Luck. Yeah. I mean, speaking of the podcast, there's a quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from so that you never miss an episode. Or you can watch the show on YouTube and get somewhere near 2 million followers, subscribers like Fort Nine's got. Ryan, because you're in Canada, obviously, and America's a country I've been to. I've unfortunately never had the pleasure of going to Canada. Met several Canadians. They're all lovely. All the best music, of course, is from there. Joni, Neil Young, etc.
Yeah, we've got goodies.
And you've got some real, yeah, so the alumnus is wonderful, really. It just strikes me as everything over there is a lot bigger. The distances between places are a lot bigger. Yeah. And the ability to get on a freeway with about 17 lanes on and just kind of lose yourself in what it is. The helmet goes on for you. The anonymity comes back into it. Can you, as much as it's your day job and your passion, do you still get that feeling every time you get on a bike, given where you can go riding and what's on your doorstep?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have a car, so I ride every day. It's for me, it's like my sanity, because I leave the office and I've got like a million things in my head. So to be able to put on the helmet and just be alone with the bike and the road and not be able to do anything else is really lovely. I've got an absolute hatred and distrust of comm units. Like, I never use them because that's like sacred time. So it's like, yeah, no cardos, like no centers. Yeah. Well, I'll put it on if I have to, if we're like shooting something and I have to talk to the filmmaker for some reason.
Have you reviewed any of their stuff? Have they seen you?
Yeah, we've done. Yeah,
it works really well. I hate them, but it works really well.
Yeah, and I understand for other people, like, they make a lot of sense. You know, other people have different things that they want from the bike. But for me, like, the last thing I want on my helmet is like this proxy for my phone. That kind of freaks me out. So yeah, I know I like the piece of it. And as you say, the spaces in Canada are just massive. I recently rode like right from the north to the south. And it's just amazing the distances between things. It's like, check your fuel, you know, like next fuel stop, 430 kilometers or whatever. And it's like, oh, you know, better make sure that's really full. Maybe you got a jerry can or whatever on there. Cause there's a whole lot of nothing out there. And yeah, that's my favorite part of Canada. It's the best thing about it. It's just the space that you have. There's total freedom that goes with that because there is no one to tell you to do anything differently. But if you behave well, and you don't bother, you know, the people, the neighbors that are up there, then yeah, you pretty much get away with anything because it's just so sparse. And you start to really value each other as well. When you rock up, like you're freezing cold and you come to like the first rest stop in 400K and there's like warm pie and coffee, suddenly it's like, oh, you're my best friend in the world. I'm going to talk and like hear your whole life story because suddenly I really, really care that you're here. It's important to me that you're here.
I can't believe you ride all year round or you don't have a car because as beautiful as Canada is, it gets cold. Let's ask about bike ownership if I can then, because obviously as long as you're nice to manufacturers, I'm assuming you obviously get given loan bikes all the time. What is your go-to bike or do you not own, do you own a bike? I think you said your dad's bike still. Do you still own that bike? And
Nope, don't have that. I did buy his DRZ for a brief season, but not very long. Did I buy it? No, I think I might have just like commandeered it actually for a few months. And then he sold it out from under me, which is...
Commandeered, a very nice word. We call it blagging. You blagged it,
yeah. Sorry, Dad. I don't think I paid for that. But I have bikes. I've got my Silver Wings. I've got an 82 GL500 or 81, somewhere in there. They only made them a couple years in Canada. That's my sort of day-to-day commuter. It's really nice. It's got like the color match luggage package. And the top box is, there's no passenger seat, which is great because my wife is amazing. She's happy to let me do whatever I want to do on a bike. She's very supportive, but she has no interest in going on the back. So I love the Silverwing because the pillion seat's just gone and you get a backrest instead. It's nice.
Looks super comfy.
It's so comfy. Yeah, it's the best. And the luggage suite is practical, but it's narrow enough that you can still filter through traffic. Mm-hmm. And it has the full Goldwing fairing on the front. Like that is the identical fairing to the Goldwing of that year. So you have really good wind protection. It's got the, what is it called? It's got like the Honda Clarion. That's what it is. The Clarion stereo system. So you can get it, which is hilarious. So you got like your speakers there. And your vents. Yeah, you can have a cassette, you can have a radio, like all that stuff. And the biggest thing in BC is the insurance. So if you have an old vehicle and it's in original-ish condition, you can get collector plates, which is like, I think for me, it's like $12 a month to insure the thing, which is really cheap. Yeah, otherwise insurance here is super expensive. So I like to run old bikes. So I've got that. I've got a 75 Van-Van. Which is the Suzuki RV125. So it's a two-stroke, but it has the high-low gearbox. So you got four gears low, four gears high, which is kind of goofy and fun. Big bubble tires. And same thing, it's on collector plates, so it's almost free to keep on the road, which is cool. And then right now I've got a Ducati Multistrada V4 Rally on loan. Very so nice. I didn't pay 40 grand for it because I don't have 40 grand to spend, but I've been sitting with that one for a while. And,
you better be nice as you can and keep it for another couple of months. Yeah.
Let's hope for that. It's a pretty cool bike. So I always have lots of stuff coming and going. I'm pretty, what's the word? I'm not very monogamous when it comes to motorcycles because usually we film with them. So I'll buy something to ride myself, but also primarily to like shoot a video with or a few videos with. And then once those videos are done, I'll sell it on and buy something else. So stuff comes and stuff goes.
I mean, it's staggering what is out and about now. We've mentioned it before, Ewan and I, about when you, I dropped my, I've got a Triumph Bonneville Bobber Black, which I took into the garage just today because I was saying before we came on air, I went over short distance to visit parents, and I had one of those days, Ryan, you know, where you think, as we mentioned about people that drive cars, one of those days where you think, I swear everyone's trying to hit me here, this is annoying me a little bit, and then pulled over and realized that my brake light was out.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, right, that's why you're all getting right on my backside. So I took it over to and to be fair, I knew we were chatting to you, so I thought, Ryan must have a video about replacing a fuse in a bottle, blah, blah, blah. But unfortunately, you've not. So if you could work on that, that'd be great.
I'll make one for you.
Yeah. So that was what knackered it. And every time I put a new fuse in, turned it on, blew. Went through six fuses, just watching it blow. So it's in the shop now. We're getting up to it.
Yeah.
So that'd be great and get me sorted. But so that was in a Triumph dealership. You go past a BMW dealership. There was a motorcycle outside the pub in the village here at the weekend, which was a brand new Goldwing, which looked like a spaceship.
And yeah.
You look at all the new bikes that BMW have brought out, all the new bikes that consistently Triumph are bringing out. And you talked about the nice simplicity of an 81, 82 Silverwing. Some of the new stuff that's coming out, A, the prices, and B, the technology. Mm. What's your thoughts on that? Because you could walk out of there with a 40 grand motorbike, couldn't you? That's got a big dash that's like an iPad, and just think, Is it still motorcycling anymore? Is riding these spaceships on wheels?
Yes, it is. I think it is. But I think what we're seeing is the end game of chasing our genres. So motorcycles used to be like pretty generalized, and you saw that in the model lines, like they were kind of all the same. And maybe you could get one with a fairing, and at a certain point. In the late 70s, you started to get kind of rear controls and things got a little sporty. But for the most part, the bikes were all kind of standard, just different sizes. What you see now with the Goldwing that you mentioned is an interesting point. Like, it looks almost like a spaceship. And that's what happens when you take the idea of like a touring specific motorcycle and keep chasing it, right? So, okay, we got to go touring. Okay, and we want the fairing bigger, bigger, bigger. And all right, if we're touring, then no one's ever taken the bags off. So we might as well not put bags on the bike, but rather build the bags into the bike.
Yeah.
Right? It's all like part of the bodywork in there now, which is lovely. And okay, then let's make a big armchair on the back for the passenger. And, long days on the highway, suddenly maybe we want radar front and back. Maybe we want advanced rider assistance systems that we're seeing now. Like, we have bikes with cameras on them that are incorporating AI into them. So they can see threats and alert the rider haptically. Like, it'll pulse your brake or vibrate your handlebars to say, hey, this car I'm seeing looks like maybe it doesn't see you or whatever. This guy coming up behind might be about to rear end you. You'd have been getting a lot of warnings on your bobber with your brake light out for that. So it's all fine stuff. And I think you can look at it and all say, yeah, this makes sense. When you look at a motorcycle for a specific application, but then you do get to a place where you end up with these very specialized motorcycles, that start to kind of become their own thing. Like, you wouldn't, you can put a Goldwing next to, whatever, a CB750, like the classic, sort of standard, motorcycle from back in the day. And it almost looks like they're two completely different machines. Like, you almost wouldn't put them in the same category anymore. Which I think is interesting.
Yeah, I suppose for me the worry is in the future that bikes will start to lose their personalities. I think back to my first bikes, like a little two-stroke 125, the noise of it, you could tinker with it, and if everything's going to go electric, all the computers, like Pratt said, all the big iPads, all the screens, I just hope we don't ever lose that genre, that personality that different bikes bring, because I think that's the beauty of bikes. It's not just, it's the sounds, it's the smell, it's the character,
Totally. Yeah, I had an R1300 GS for a video earlier this year. And that was like one of my big thoughts on it, because the old GSs, like the Boxer engines, are just like a weird layout to begin with, right? So like, they have to share the crank, so like one cylinder's in front of the other. And when you start it up, it kind of shakes side to side because that's the way the pistons go. And like, when you rev it in traffic, you get the same little shimmy, and like, it's odd. And it's imperfect, but people live with the imperfection for long enough that they started to love it. And now with the new one, they've made the cylinders symmetrical again, and they've totally killed any side to side oscillations. So it rides perfectly. But a lot of the old GS guys get on and they're like, this has lost the character for me. This is not the same anymore. And I think that we're all like that when it comes to gas bikes. Like, if you think from first principles, does it make sense for your machine to go rah, and like make a bunch of smell you know, and like leak shit on your floor. Like, no, yeah. You know, if your computer were like vibrating on your desk and leaking shit everywhere and smoking, like you would say that's a bad thing. right. Like no one wants a machine that does that. If your blender did that in the morning, that would be unpleasant. So I think it's true of motorcycles as well. Like if all of us were complete versions to the world and we had no idea what a motorcycle was and we were presented with an electric bike and a gas one, we'd say, obviously the electric one is better. Mm-hmm. This is silent. It makes all of its power at any RPM in the rev range. There's no fluids to come out and it's very low maintenance. But we're all dinosaurs. We've all been used to these gas bikes and that's become pleasurable to us because the wonderful freedom and thrill that we have when riding, we've come to associate with the other things like the smell and the noise. And so now we don't want to give them up. And I'm totally in that boat as well. But we'll see. A generation from now, two generations from now, I don't think people will feel that way at all.
That the way you've described that is so succinctly perfect because as we all progress and everybody wants things that are more comfortable and easier and all that, there's a lot about when you sit and think about motorbikes, there's a lot about, well, it's impractical, it's dangerous, it's ridiculous, it's the choice to get piss wet through, stood on the side of the road, swearing into your helmet about why it won't start. There's tinkering with it in the garage where you think, sorry, I'll take the catalytic converter off. It'd be easy.
Yeah.
4 hours later when you split the chassis and you're going, why the hell have I started it? You wouldn't get a Mac, would you? And go, do you know what? I'm just going to unscrew the monitor and have a little look inside it.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. But I think you've really summed up there because it's, and what we've got from this, Ewan, as well, haven't we, with everyone that we've spoken to, the theme that runs through it is the way it makes you feel. So that moment when you are soaking and you're a bit cold is absolutely in stark contrast to when you feel like you're floating and that journey's gone like that, but you've been so super honed into what you're doing that it becomes one of the only things nowadays in life that you get totally immersed in, like you say about having a pack on your helmet, which is basically your phone, but to be able to go, well, there's nothing else I can do for the next 3 hours other than shift the gears up and down, brake it hopefully occasionally, look at how much petrol I've got and get to where I need to get to. There's something gloriously simplistic about something that's wholly impractical, isn't there?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think the fact that it is uncomfortable, that it's sometimes cold, sometimes really hot, sometimes sore on your butts, and the fact that it's dangerous, like that you have to focus singularly on your task or else your life is at risk, that's a big part of the joy for me as well. Because you get where you're going and suddenly I appreciate my living room. Like I'm warm and I'm dry and I'm safe. And suddenly I love all those things.
Yeah.
Because remembering like an hour ago when it was sleeting and -3 and I felt really endangered, not endangered, but that I had to focus or that I might be on the fringe of danger if I weren't really paying attention. You know, you have to have both of those things. If our lives get too comfortable and too easy, then I think we stop appreciating the things that are comfortable and easy in them. And that's a big part of riding for me too, for sure. Yeah, I get really annoyed when I have to go in a car. If I have to do like a car trip or something, it's like, it doesn't do the same thing for me at all.
Yeah.
It just evokes memories for me as well. Like when I'm on a motorbike, I don't know, I seem like an idiot. I do in the car as well, but when you've got your helmet on, you can absolutely be stupid. It reminds me of being a kid on a motocross scrambler through the local fields, like you grew up doing similar things. And I don't know, it's the only time I think when I'm on a bike that it makes me feel young again for some reason. And the fact you are concentrating. Yeah. And to anyone who doesn't ride bikes, you try and explain it to them. They say, well, no thanks, mate. Why do you want all that? You know, but there is something so special about two wheels. It really is.
There is. It's funny you bring up singing because that's almost ubiquitous. Like every rider I talk to sings like an idiot in their helmet. and I don't know what that is. Maybe I'll try to figure that out at some point. But because I'm the same. I sing like crazy in my helmet. I don't sing anywhere else. I don't sing it here. I don't really sing in the shower, in my car, or whatever. There's something about bikes.
It's because no one can hear how awful you are. And, you know, you're in your helmet. You sound great. It's vibrating in your own ears. You don't sound quite good.
Yeah. That's probably what it is. Yeah, that's probably what it is. The cacophony just kind of hides everything.
It's the same with the acoustics in the shower, isn't it? You don't want to sound quite good, actually. And then a car rider next to you going, what on earth are you doing? He's just screaming away.
Yeah, it's
Christ. Ryan, I tell you what. I mean, this is I could chew your ear off all day. I've got a list of what's wrong with my bike. What would Ryan do? Ryan, would you do this? Can you talk through that? All this very Triumph specific content coming our way. Just before we wrap up, anything in the pipeline that you're excited about? Any projects that are coming up that we should keep an eye out for on the channel?
Oh yeah, we've got some exciting stuff coming up. I don't even know how much I can say about it. We're going after some world records. So we've got some big kind of long-term projects that we're working on. From one of them, we're making our first like kind of feature length movie. So, nice. We'll have a film sort of north of 60 minutes coming out, sometime next year. So, that's coming, but I don't want to say too much about it yet. Cause we've got a plan for kind of typical marketing guys, right? It's like, all right, a few months before we'll start teasing it. We'll say this and we'll build up short content, whatever. So I better not spoil that for the powers that be. But we got some long stuff coming out, some big projects.
Yeah. I was going to say, Seth says, well, the process that you're following so far, you're nailing it. So yeah, don't veer away from what you either coming up with yourself or being told what to do. Because far be it from us to try and scupper 2 million subscribers just because we want to know exclusive on our podcast back over here. Right. Final question time, and it's along these lines always, and we've had some wonderful answers, and it's a whole host of different vibes and situations. So it's a fantasy bike ride for you, please, with obviously a North American Canadian slant on it. Where are you going? What bike you're riding? Who potentially you're riding with? And what's the soundtrack? Although from a soundtrack point of view, it sounds like you'd be singing rather than actually listening to anything in your helmet.
Yeah, it wouldn't be music. It wouldn't be podcasts, no offense. It would probably just be blissful silence that lets me think or lets me sing as much as I want to. In terms of where I'm going, I've just spent a good bit of time in the Canadian North and it left me wanting so much more of it. Mm. It's like the tundra is insane. It's perfectly flat. And the stars are like nothing you've ever seen. So you've got this 180 degree bowl of just unbelievable starlight. Like you're picking out galaxies and stuff. It's like you feel like you're in some kind of space movie. And then you get the northern lights, like the aurora borealis, just going off like crazy. Some greens and purples, and it's unbelievably beautiful. There's no one up there. The air is so cold and like so crisp and clean. And the animals, like, oh, there's a moose over there, you know, like there's a bear. You see them everywhere, right? There's muskox up there. Those things look ridiculous, like hair down to the ground, tiny little animals that look like chia pets or whatever. So anyway, I go up to the Canadian North, and I'm really interested in the idea of true off-roading, like no road, no trail, no nothing, just like riding across the tundra, which you can do in some spots. So let's go with like maybe a modified like BW. Do you remember the big wheel, like the Yamaha BW?
Nice.
They made like a 350, something like that. So
very nice.
Light, two stroke, huge balloon tires. I go with my buddies who shoot. So maybe go with like Edwin and Girish and my buddies here. We'll put them in like an Argo, these like kind of like 6x6, you know, many wheeled machines that float. It becomes a boat. Which is really important because there's a lot of water up there. And then we'll set some kind of mission, you know, like we got to cross, you know, maybe 1,000 K of this tundra, like truly off-road and get to something unique. I know up there, this isn't giving too much away. If someone wants to find this, they can find it before me. But but there's a Boeing Stratoliner up there that was allegedly carrying a nuclear bomb. There's a fire on board. The crew jumped out. This was a U.S. Air Force plane out of New York. So they bailed. The fire's raging. They set the autopilot just due north to get it, you know, away from civilization. And the damn thing kept flying. The fire went out. It flew for like another 1,000 miles and just set down up there in a pretty good shape far up in the Canadian North. So it's been spotted by some bush pilots. It's been visited by some guys in the winter because it's easier to cross that terrain on snow machines when all the lakes are frozen. Yeah. But getting there in the summer is a real challenge. So let's go for that. Try to get up there and you know, live our Cold War Broken Arrow fantasies would be pretty cool.
No wonder your content's so good. You light up when you were talking about that journey. You're it's imagination, because I know most of it's real, but just your description of where you're going, and you look like a little boy. Your smile was beaming. I loved it.
How can you not, right? I mean, that's so fun.
That is amazing.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I'm just trying to picture it in my head. Because like I said, we've had some good answers, but my word, that is a great answer, Ryan. My God.
Yeah. Well, hey, if you guys got the bug now, I can send you all kinds of stuff. I've been filing like freedom of information requests and talking to, there's some old guys in Quebec who know about this spot and they speak like the most jagged French. So hard to understand. And there's these weird little breadcrumbs. It's like, it's a cool thing up there. Yeah. If you guys ever fancy an adventure today in North, let me know.
Oh my God. That was
come
awesome.
On out. So we'll put you in big, you know, big puppy Canada Goose snowsuits. Get you up there, man.
It's all right. You and get those for free anyway over here, don't you? And it's
actually, props, don't kill me. I actually do get kind of the good stuff for free. I did many years ago, not anymore.
No kidding. Yeah, seriously. Sweet.
Yeah.
Ryan, that's how famous he is over here.
Yeah, I went to work at the Sochi Winter Olympics and I got sent out with kind of the goose stuff. Yeah.
That's the stuff you want anyway. For free, man. That stuff's expensive. Holy.
Yeah, exactly. It's good stuff. Yeah.
But it is. It's the best. No, you go up. Well, up in the north in the winter, it's like you'd think everyone were on the same team because they all got that exact same patch on the shoulder. It's, like, it's the standard issue jacket up there if you're not wearing actual animal furs. So.
Well, sadly, I mean, that's about it for this week's full chat and freebie chat as well, as ever, from Ewan. So we're powered by Bikeshaw and as the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikeshaw will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter or moped insurance. And much, much more.
Ryan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Honestly, thank you first and foremost for getting up very early. I know there's a big time difference in Canada. So thank you to our very special guest, the one and only Ryan F9. You've been amazing, mate.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much for having me, guys.
It's been so good. We look forward, of course, to some more Fortnite films on YouTube. And talking of YouTube, don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so you never miss an episode of this, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
As ever, a massive thank you for everyone for tuning in and listening, and we will see you next time. See you later.